Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Happy to be here today with the folks from the Mountain Watershed Association. That's Carla Ruddock. She's the Director of Conservation. Ashley Funk is the Executive Director. And Eric Harder is the Riverkeeper. Welcome to the three of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today.
Ashley, I'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Mountain Watershed Association and assume our listeners at home know nothing about it? So start from the beginning.
Yes. So Mountain Watershed Association, we are a grassroots organization and we're headquartered in Mellcroft, Pennsylvania, which is close to Donegal off the Turnpike exit. But we serve the entire Youghiogheny River watershed. And so a lot of people are familiar with the Youghiogheny River because that's the river that flows through Ohio Pyle State Park. It actually has its headwaters in West Virginia and goes the whole way to McKeesport. So our organization, we work to protect, preserve, and restore the Youghiogheny River watershed and its broader communities through conservation, recreation, education, and advocacy. Our organization has been around since 1994, so 29 years. And we have primarily focused a lot of our restoration efforts within the Indian Creek watershed in particular, which is a mountain community watershed that you'll pass through on your way to Ohio Pyle. And that watershed in particular has been impacted by historical mining and has a legacy of abandoned mine drainage issues throughout the watershed. And our work has been able to restore 70% of the streams that have been impaired over the past 29 years. So as a result, we see trout now reproducing in our watershed. It's a popular fishing area. We also maintain a 19-mile hiking and biking trail called the Indian Creek Valley Trail. And in addition to that, we advocate to make sure that our waterways remain clean and protected and fishable, swimmable. So there's a lot of different parts of our work, and we're excited to talk more about them today.
Carla, why don't you explain to people at home what an abandoned underground mine can do to the flow of the water in a community?
Sure. The mine discharges are all unique. Every single one of them has a different chemical component and background that goes into them. So we have abandoned mine drainage treatment systems. We have five of them currently installed within the Indian Creek watershed. And each of those is designed specifically for the chemistry of that discharge. But primarily within the Indian Creek watershed, we have iron and aluminum metals coming into the water. And they go through our passive treatment systems before they go back into the stream. And those treatment systems are removing the majority, probably 98% of the iron and aluminum metals that come up through the mine as it touches the water and adds on.
Today, would an organization who was mining underground like that be permitted to not worry about that water runoff and not worry? I mean, you know, what is the difference, right? I mean, you're working on problems that were caused before you were born, right?
Yeah, different regulations have been put in place to protect the areas now for areas that are currently mined. But what we're dealing with was we're dealing with the legacy historic mining, wherein the coal companies just pretty much closed up shop after they mined and they didn't know that this was happening or would happen down the road. So the new regulations that they have put in place are there to help protect streams so this doesn't occur in the future. Plus the new technology that is available for both reclamation and for mining. They learn from the lessons of the past.
Eric, why don't you talk to us about maybe, you know, I realize that you're probably very young and you, again, these problems probably happened before you were born and now you've grown up to treat them, but what would the water look like, smell like, taste like, quality-wise before versus what your organization was able to do with it today? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. Water quality within Indian Creek, like Ashley was saying, currently is really good. We have, from our last survey, 15 different species of fish that they're home in Indian Creek. And so we think that's a great, nice, diverse crew of fish to not only just exist in a waterway, but for people to come and try to catch. Obviously, recreation is a big deal to us in this area. And if our treatment systems were not in place, not only would it'd be visibly different, water quality wise. It would look a lot of times orange, different discharges like aluminum, which Carla was speaking about, will come out in a cloudy or a white kind of discharge or milky water. And if those discharges are going straight into Indian Creek, the fish definitely disappear. They're only able to tolerate a certain amount of pollution. And if there is too much iron coming into their home, then they move elsewhere and find a different place to spend their time. So if we go back before mining even started, you still may have land use issues where people were logging heavily, using the land in ways that we now know may have not been as responsible. And so another part of what we're trying to do is teach our community and at least provide a sense of stewardship for the waterway. Now that it's clean, now that we can fish out of it, let's be sure to keep it that way so that our grandkids or, you know, whoever that comes along can enjoy what the water should be. You know, as we said, fishable and swimmable, those are two big things to us in our area. People love to get out and fish and love to get out on the water to play. And if we couldn't do that here, we would not only lose a lot of our recreation-based economy, but a lot of the families that look for clean places and fun places to live would also probably pack up and find another place to do that.
Hmm. Well, I can't imagine that this was a small endeavor, you know, that you've been working on for all of these years. Carla, what kind of technology do you have to invest in to enable this sort of thing? You know, what's happening underground behind the scenes that people probably don't even realize that you're doing?
Well, the first step into reclamating all these sites was to identify all of those. So we had to do a study to identify each of the discharges, what makes those discharges, the chemistry behind those. Then we had to go apply and get grant funding for engineering to design the systems, and then additional grant funding for installation of the systems, finding based on the engineering studies that were completed. And then we do work with the State Department of Environmental Protection's Bureau of Abandoned Mine Reclamation to help oversee and maintain our treatment systems. So there's a lot of background work in these systems, and it does take years to get them on the ground and millions of dollars per system.
Absolutely. Ashley, tell us about how you fundraise. You know, how are you funded, and how do you make sure that you can participate in this process?
Yeah, so as Carla mentioned, each treatment system can cost millions of dollars. Within the Indian Creek watershed alone, we have invested about $9 million in these treatment systems. A lot of the funding for abandoned mine drainage reclamation actually comes from a state or federal level. The majority of our systems are funded from state programs that provide grant money in order for organizations like ours to implement these types of projects. And so that money is coming from taxpayers at the end of the day, because a lot of these mines were abandoned by coal companies who then went bankrupt and they weren't actually paying their fair share to remediate it. So now it's on the onus of the state in order to clean these up. But that said, the state funding alone does not cover all of the costs. We have also had to fundraise from private foundations, such as the Richard King Mellon Foundation, who provide the funding that we need in order to pay for staff to work to implement these projects, but also continually maintain them, because the maintenance of the treatment systems is never ending. Once you remove coal from the ground, there's a lot of indigenous nations who actually talk about coal as the liver of the earth. So you take that out, and there's no longer a filtration mechanism happening underground, the water that is passing through. So the water passing underground is will forever flow polluted until it is treated. And so a lot of the treatment systems that we have still do require flushing, maintenance in a lot of different avenues. And we also have to sample the water quality to make sure that they are efficiently operating, because the lifetime of a system after it is installed is really probably only about 20 years before we have to pay in order to rehabilitate the system. Wow. So It is state funding and private funding. And I do want to note that actually through the most recent infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, there's a really significant investment of money being made on a federal level in order to clean up these abandoned mine sites. And Pennsylvania is receiving the most money out of that federal investment because we actually have the most miles of impaired streams and the most acreage of abandoned mine land out of any other state in the Commonwealth. We have about 5,500 miles of streams that are currently impaired by abandoned mine drainage. So as a result, we're getting a lot of influx in federal money in order to move forward this reclamation work.
So Eric, do you, as the riverkeeper, continue to monitor? So after this technology is installed, you test the water, you keep up with it?
Yeah, we're constantly out, as you know, several members of our staff go out and sample, whether it's related to our treatment systems, which are treating abandoned treatment or discharges. We also do sampling around bacteria levels in our waterways, ongoing mining activities. We do monitoring around. There's landfills that we do compliance monitoring. And there's also baseline data that we want to collect about different streams in our area that we would like to be able to say are healthy or not healthy, so that in the end, that assessment can be used to prioritize for upcoming projects, whether it's related to abandoned mining or better infrastructure when it comes to runoff and roads or sewer infrastructure, anything like that. So our monitoring does happen majority around our treatment systems and I guess their performance. And in a way, we've taken what we've done in Indian Creek and use it as a blueprint for either us or other partners to use throughout the Yauk watershed and Southwest Pennsylvania. So there's definitely lots of monitoring that goes on. And that's one thing that we kind of struggle with is how much do we need to do in order to capture whether there is a pollution or any kind of issue going on with the system. Throughout the year, we may say, oh, we're gonna start increasing the frequency of sampling around certain mines since we're seeing water quality change. Another example would be during the summertime, we take samples for monitor bacteria levels, specifically E. coli, and we put those out to make sure the public knows if their local waterways are safe to swim in or not. And in order to do that effectively, we need to do that weekly. So we do that monitoring weekly and post those results before, say, Saturday comes when people are most likely to be out on the waterway.
Wow, fascinating. So let's talk about some events, and I'll just put them out there, and then whoever wants to talk about them, that's fine. I see one coming up on June 12th. Growing Up Wild, a Project Wet training. Who wants to take that one?
Yeah, I can talk about that. So that event is a training for educators who are working. This is particularly for younger children. And it is a workshop that we're going to be holding in partnership with the Allegheny Land Trust. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be teaching educators how to incorporate environmental education into their curriculum. And we actually have a program that is providing some funding. So the first five educators for this workshop and the additional workshops that we have will receive a stipend in order to participate. So it's really about incorporating more environmental education into curriculum in that region.
Wonderful. How about the golf outing is coming up on June 24th at Donegal Highlands. I love that course. That's beautiful. Who wants to talk about that?
This will be our third annual golf scramble, and that proceeds for this event are benefiting our Indian Creek Valley Trail. Previously was for our Steyer Bridge section of the trail, which as of last year, I believe we have raised enough funding to do that section of the trail and get that bridge built across. And so now we are moving it on to just in general for the trail and for a section of the trail that we had a washout back in, I think it was 2021, due to some of the high rains that came in, it washed a section of our trail out. And we're raising money to get that corrected so it'll be safe for the residents to use that trail and not have to fear washing away again.
And just to note, the Indian Creek Valley Trail, it's a 19-mile hiking and biking trail that runs from Jones Mills, Pennsylvania in Westmoreland County, the whole way down to Mill Run, Pennsylvania in Fayette County, which is Springfield Township. And that trail meets at the end, the Yaukagiri River. It's the confluence of Indian Creek and the Yauk. And a large portion of the trail, especially the part in Mill Run, runs through what is called a natural heritage area, which is known for its high ecological diversity. And it's an absolutely beautiful section of trail for anyone who's interested in going out and seeing a lot of different native species, plant life, animals, all throughout that section. So we definitely recommend it.
Oh, wow. Your job is so interesting. So then you have the third annual Yauk River Float trip. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. We'll give a big shout out to Hazel Bakers. They're one of the partners that we've used in many different events, but they came to us and said, hey, we'd like to make a float trip possible for you guys as a fundraiser. So they basically donate all of the logistics, the shuttle, the vehicles, the boats, and life jackets and whatnot. And so we have the third annual event coming up. We'll put in Dawson, Pennsylvania, and float to the Hazel Baker outfit or the outpost there in Layton, Pennsylvania. The entire way basically parallels the Yauk Trail, and it's a very commonly used section of river. And interesting is that even though we're off the mountain and we're in a much more developed area, it still seems like we're in a wilderness setting when we're on that trip. So we're definitely invite anyone to check out our website and our events page to look at logistics for that.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing.
And one thing I want to notice about that event is that we do want to make getting on the river accessible for all different people throughout the community. So it's a sliding scale range, the ticket is. So you can get on and have your float trip for as low as $35. Or if you want to help support someone else get on the water, you can. There's a sliding scale for folks to be able to contribute more. So it is an accessible way for people who might not have been able to go out before, or they don't have the resources to have a boat, to get out there on the water and experience it.
Well, I'm having a great conversation today with the folks from the Mountain Watershed Association. Carla Ruddock is the Director of Conservation. Ashley Funk is the Executive Director, and Eric Harder is the River Keeper. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy, having a fascinating conversation today with the folks from the Mountain Watershed Association. So we've talked about your events, your fundraising, the work you do, the work that you have done, and how it's benefited the ecological systems in our own community. So now I have to ask about you. So I'm going to start with Eric. What a cool job you have as the river keeper. So I got to hear it. How did this come about?
It is a cool job. I will agree with you there. I feel very fortunate being here at Mountain Watershed Association. And part of that, part of our organization really expanded in 2003 when our global nonprofit called Waterkeeper Alliance approached our organization and said, hey, we'd like you guys to host a riverkeeper position, and here's the details, here's what, you know, in exchange, how it kind of works. But basically my job is to, in a sense, speak for the river and speak for many of the communities or neighborhoods or the fish, the birds, whatever it might be, is to make sure that the river has a say in the public stance. And it's really important for our area to realize how important our river is and how much of a driving factor it is in some of our economic systems. When we talk to different groups or we talk about recreation, you know, the reason people come to the area a lot is based on our terrain and our rivers. And for me, it's a piece of cake for me to go out there and say, hey, this river is great, because I also love to go rafting. And so being able to say, you're going to have a good time out here on the Lower Highlands Trail or out on rafting on the river or canoeing if you don't like the rapids or anything like that. But really that ability to communicate about how important our river is, to share a nice afternoon, whatever it might be, and as a way to really create a connection between that person and their natural surroundings. And that's really what got me stuck on Pennsylvania. I'm from originally Kansas, and I've moved around quite a few times. And now looking back on it, you know, this is a place that me and my family really care about, and we're really glad we landed here because of the clean water, the clean air, and the clean mountainsides that we can grow up in and recreate on. So I think my job is kind of a wide range of parts, but I think the public engagement is really my favorite part, because I get to share some of these experiences that I've had.
Ashley, I was reading your bio online, and you grew up here, you know, different from the last story we just heard. And, you know, what made you interested in this, and what was your education path and work experience to get to this point?
Yeah, so I grew up in Mount Pleasant. Right now, our office is only about 20 minutes away from there. And Mount Pleasant is part of the Occhigany River watershed where we serve. And I actually grew up with an abandoned mine site in my backyard. And we, as a family, experienced the impacts of that because people weren't aware of some of the health impacts that that could have. And they would ride quads and dirt bikes all over it. And the dust would then really be airborne and settle into our home. And there are pictures of me as a kid just grinning ear to ear, just covered in coal ash. And as I got older, I started to recognize that it wasn't necessarily something that should be in our backyard. And I started getting more engaged and interested in environmental work generally. Whenever I was in high school, I helped to lead litter cleanups through the Mount Pleasant area and start and do a recycling program in the town and in the school. And that really led me into a trajectory to go to college. I went to college out of state, largely because I was able to get a very good scholarship. And I studied environmental studies and engineering with the thought of going back and working on environmental issues that would serve the region that I was from. I didn't immediately think that I would go back home because, you know, from a small town, people often want to just head out. But pretty soon after being out of state for college, I realized that my heart really was in this area. I'm the seventh generation of my family to live in the Laurel Highlands region, and it really is a place that's important to me. So I actually learned about Mountain Watershed Association when I was in college, not necessarily when I was growing up. And after learning about the organization, I was kind of hooked. And I joke that even before I applied for a job, I came and was just constantly asking them how I could work here. So once I graduated, I was able to secure a job with the organization, and I've been with them ever since.
And they're blessed to have you, for sure. Carla, we have about 2 minutes left. Would you mind sharing your story with everyone?
Sure. Like Ashley, I grew up not far from here, just outside the Laurel Highlands region. And I always had a love and a passion to be outdoors. And I knew that's where I wanted to be going through high school and stuff. I went to all kinds of camps that could get me outdoors. And then I went to California University of Pennsylvania, where I got my bachelor's of science in environmental science, with a concentration on pollution control. So I knew where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do, that I needed to be a part of making, you know, cleaning up the water and making our world a better place.
This is just an amazing organization. I am so grateful that we were able to connect about this, and I hope we'll be able to continue to publicize what you do. I see your website is mtwatershed.com. Do you want to share any social channels as well for people out there?
Yeah, we're probably most active on Facebook, and you can find us at Mountain Watershed Association. We have a page on Facebook, and we also have an Instagram that's just Mountain Watershed. That's the handle. Those are the key social media channels that you can find us on.
Wonderful. Wonderful work. Exciting stuff. I definitely encourage you to jump on the website and learn a lot about what they're doing, participate in events, get involved. It's a wonderful organization. So I want to thank you again for joining us here on WHJB. The Mountain Watershed Association folks today are Ashley Funk, the executive director, Carla Rudick, she's the director of conservation, and Eric Harder, the river keeper. Guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you all enjoyed this program. If you have an idea for a guest on the show, please reach out to WHJB. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.